Before we get started, I want to ask a favor of you. It's a big ask for some of you, I know, but I have faith in your ability to do it. The favor is this. I want to ask you to make sure that you are sitting beside someone not in your household. If that is not the case, would you please move from where you are seated now so that you are seated by someone not in your household? If you are afraid this may cause some undue stress, don't worry, we have medical personnel in the house. And for you excessive introverts, no worries, you're not going to have to say a word to the person beside you. All right. The early church was a radical group of people who seemed odd to the culture around them. As followers of Jesus, they sought to be transformed into the likeness of Jesus. One of the most radical ways in which they were transformed, which led to their great witness in the world, had to do with their understanding of and relationship to their stuff. Luke describes that radical transformation in the book of Acts we just read. All believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of their possessions were their own, but they shared everything they had. They owned houses, land, they sold them. They would bring the money from the sales and put it at the apostles' feet. It would be distributed to any who had need. You hear how radical that is? No one claimed that any of his or her possessions were their own. That sounds pretty crazy to us Americans who've been taught the exact opposite from the very beginning of our lives. If you've spent much time with preschoolers, you soon learn that their favorite four-letter word is mine. As we get older, we don't say it out loud as often, but we think it and live it and certainly vote it. Our sense of ownership and possessiveness expresses itself in all kinds of anxiety and greed. The miraculous thing about this community in Acts is that they were not forced to share or give up their possessions. They still owned stuff, but they didn't possess it. Or should I say, it did not possess them. From time to time, someone who owned something, land or a house, for instance, they would voluntarily sell it and bring the money into the church so it could be given to those in need. They put their theology into practice. Or as we sometimes say, they literally put their money where their mouth was. Their theology went something like this. It's not my stuff. It's all God's stuff. And God wants God's stuff to be used to make a difference in people's lives. God doesn't want anybody going without the basic necessities of life. So I'll give what I can to help. Because everything I have belongs to God anyway. Israel was taught that lesson when they were on the verge of entering the promised land, and Moses warned them, when you eat and are satisfied, when you build fine houses and settle down, and when your herds and flocks grow large and your silver and gold increase and all you have is multiplied, then your heart will become proud. You may even say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. But remember the Lord your God, for it is the Lord who gives you the ability to produce wealth. The first step toward becoming a person of generosity is coming to grips with who owns the stuff. Deciding whose stuff it is and who gets what money changes everything at a profound level. Now, to help you understand your relationship to stuff, I'd like for you to take out your wallets. Go ahead, take out your... This is an action sermon. If your wallet is in your phone electronically, then take out your phone. For many of us, our wallet phone is our best friend. We know it well. We keep it close by. We know where it is at all times. Now I want you to take your wallet or phone, hold it for a second. Rub your hands over it. Get those warm, fuzzy feelings going. You know those feelings you have when you're with your best friend? Now, I want you to hand your wallet or your phone to the person beside you who's not in your household. Come on, you can do it. I believe in you. All right, everybody made the switch? Okay. How does it feel having someone else in possession of your money? How does it feel being in possession of someone else's money? Well, at this time, our ushers are going to come forward and we're going to take up a special offering. I feel assured we will raise our budget deficit. And you're going to be able to be that generous person you've always wanted to be. Okay. Now everyone give your wallets and phones back to the person to whom God originally loaned them. So I'll take a deep breath. But don't put your wallet or phone away. Keep it in your hand. Hold on to it. Now let me ask you a question. Do you really believe that the contents of your wallet are really yours? That they really belong to you? Or have you come to that humble realization that the money you hold in your hand really isn't yours after all? That it all belongs to God? And that God intends for you to share what you've been given with others? That's one of the reasons we take up an offering each week. It's why we shape a budget for ministry, why we distribute our offerings among various ministries in and through this good place, so that we're always mindful that everything we have belongs to God, given to us in order to share the love of God. The psalmist sings, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it. If the truth be told, most of us have a problem with the ownership issue. And it often controls our attitudes and our behaviors in ways that are not always pleasing to God. In the prominent theological journal Reader's Digest, I came across the story of a woman at an airport waiting to get on an airplane. She had purchased a small bag of Oreo cookies and was sitting in the waiting area beside a man she did not know, Oreos perched on the armrest between them. Without saying a word, the guy sitting next to her reaches into the bag, takes out a cookie, and proceeds to eat it. She's quite flabbergasted. Not wanting to make a scene, though, she reaches into the bag, takes out a cookie, and starts to eat it. The man just smiles and nods at her. It seems he doesn't speak the same language she does. So she continues reading her paper. A minute or two later, there is more rustling, and he's helping himself to another cookie. Because she's growing angry, she doesn't allow herself to say anything, but she reaches in to take another cookie. And before long, they come to the end of the package, and there's only one cookie left. The man reaches in, takes the last cookie, breaks it in two, slides half of it over to her, eats the rest, and then leaves. Still fuming sometime later when her flight is announced, the woman opens her handbag to get her ticket, and to her shock and utter embarrassment, she finds her pack of unopened Oreos. Here she thought someone was eating her cookies, when in reality, she was eating someone else's cookies and didn't even know it. Many of us have a lot of cookies that we think belong to us. But in truth, they belong to God and all God's children throughout the world. And many of us who've read and studied Scripture all of our lives don't even know it. I am aware of one 12-year-old girl who knows it. Several years ago, while living in Jasper, a 12-year-old girl I did not know knocks on the door of my house. She had heard that our church was involved in a ministry that provides mosquito nets to people in Africa to protect them from malaria while they sleep. She had in her hand a sandwich bag full of money, $60 roughly, that she said she had retrieved from her very own piggy bank. She gave me the bag of money to give to our church so that we could help protect lives in Africa. In my life as a pastor, I have witnessed people who gave significantly large sums of money for purposes of ministry. But I do not believe I've ever been as moved as I was that day by such an act of unselfish, loving generosity. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, says the psalmist. It all belongs to God. God's wallet, God's phone, God's cookies, God's coins, God's clothes, God's 401k, God's house, God's car, God's church, God's world. It's all God's stuff. I don't know about you, but I often tend to think my stuff is mine. I tend to think I've earned it or I'm entitled to it. It becomes a source of pride, and I start to believe there's some security in it. At times, I even become anxious about it. But it's all God's stuff. God made it. God created it. And God grants me breath every single second to live and to work and to enjoy God's stuff in order to provide for my family, share with those in need, and use it to make the world a better place. Pastor John Ortberg received the following email from a church member of his. "Dear Pastor, because I fly, I've always had a dream of owning an airplane one day. I got to the point where I could actually buy one. I also serve on the board of directors for a Christian ministry to street kids in Brazil. We had two facilities for boys, but none for girls. An opportunity arose to purchase a piece of property for a girl's home. There wasn't time for a capital campaign. We had to do something immediately, and it involved a significant amount of money. The only way I could help was to stop dreaming about my new airplane and give the airplane money to this ministry. So that's what I did. I still don't have the airplane, and I never will. But the joy I receive watching the girls' ministry take off has more than made up for the absence of my airplane. Today there are more than 60 girls who would be living on the streets of Brazil, now living in a home with people who love them. So it really wasn't a sacrifice at all, just a redeployment of funds." Here's somebody who says, "Here's something I want. But God, I'm gonna give it up because I think there's something else you want me to do with this." And when that man gets to the end of his life, I don't think he's going to look back on that decision and say, "You know, I wish I hadn't given that money to that girl's home. I wish I'd bought that airplane instead." Might be an interesting exercise for us to ask ourselves, if I were to die today, would I have any regrets about what I've done with my stuff? The time to shape a life with no regrets regarding your stuff can begin today. Generosity is the way to shape such a life. Generosity almost never leads to regret. Generosity enlarges our souls and expands the reach of God's love. I believe most people want to be generous, but fear, or the experience of losing everything, or just good old personal comfort and security keep us from becoming the generous persons we want to be. We move toward becoming generous person by understanding that all we have belongs to the God of extravagant generosity, given to us to meet our basic needs, to share with others in their need, and to make the world a better place. We're able to share generously when we keep our wants from becoming needs, and learn to sacrifice our wants for the meeting of others' needs. I hope you now have a better understanding of the sandwich bag you hold in your hand. I want to encourage you to keep it somewhere prominent in your home where you will see it often. And when you see the Oreo cookies, after fighting the temptation to eat them because they're not yours, remember the woman in the airport who thought she was eating her own Oreos, who was so angry because she thought someone was eating what belonged to her. But in reality, she was taking what belonged to someone else, someone who willingly shared what he had. And when you see the penny in the sandwich bag, remember the generosity of a 12-year-old girl who gave money she had been saving for who knows what and decided to use it to save lives in Africa. And when you see that little paperclip airplane, reflect on the dreams you presently have for spending what you think is your money. And remember the businessman's redeployment of funds. And imagine 60 girls living in safety off the streets of Brazil. Imagine how your money could save lives. Imagine how your money could help the lives of the homeless in our city, or make the world a better place by even shaping the lives of children in this place, nurturing deep Christian relationships, forming faith in the way of Jesus, inspiring us all through worship to give our lives fully and completely to God. Think about this large facility in which we're sitting at the corner of Vineville and Pierce that belongs not to us, but to God. What might God want us to do with what we've been given to transform the lives of people in our community? We've been together exactly 9 months now. And I can honestly tell you, I believe in this community of faith. It's not a perfect place, but it's full of some wonderfully, perfectly imperfect people. And I have people share with me how grateful they are for the welcome they find here and in our morning school, accepting children other places do not. I have people share with me how the music of worship here opens their hearts to God's love and grace. I'm simply blown away by the conversations I have with the magnificent children of our church. I feel so privileged to work with Angela and Lee as we pool our gifts together for the sake of the church and its work, seeking to do what we can to make our church the most Christ-like community we can be. I trust the lay leadership of our church, who deeply love this place, whose hearts are in the right place, and who seek the responsible and faithful way forward for our congregation. If you're wondering, I sincerely believe you can trust your resources to God's work in this place. You can feel good about being generous and supporting the ministries, the work, the relationships that make Vineville Baptist Church. Sometimes the past success or largeness of a congregation can be its worst enemy. We focus on what we once were, and we focus on going back there, and we fail to see the beautiful and plentiful gifts we have among us right now. All that we have, all that you have, all that I have, belongs to God. The question is always, what are we doing? What are you doing? What am I doing with what we've been given?